and welcome. Glad to have you with me. Delighted to have you. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I was nearly late for my own show. I made the mistake of trying to go through the Chick-fil-A drive-thru too late in the day. Goodness gracious. By too late in the day, I mean they were open. So I got a Chick-fil-A by my house. I kid you not. They've had to reconfigure the drive-thru so you've got two lanes at all times from beginning to end, and it still wraps around, spills out onto the highway, backs up traffic in every direction, and it doesn't matter what time of day or night it is. The only time it's not happening is on a Sunday, and even then it sometimes happens when the people forget it's Sunday. Everybody wants their Jesus chicken. All right. We must get into the program now instead of complaining about my chicken. By the way, pro tip, I discovered if you use the app, you can put bacon on pretty much everything at Chick-fil-A. Now, we are getting out of Afghanistan. The president of the United States, Donald Trump, said we need to wait. What? What? You would never know that by the media, would you? The president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, ordered all American personnel out of Afghanistan. And he was condemned by the press. CNN had its talking heads on, talking about how this was an inappropriate thing to do. How dare he? Rumors say the Joint Chiefs are upset with the president. They're dragging their feet and don't want to do it. And yet he made them. How dare he not listen to the Joint Chiefs of Staff? And then he leaves and Joe Biden comes in and does the same damn thing. And, oh, it's so wonderful. Did you know Joe Biden? He's going to get the troops out. Donald Trump couldn't get the troops out. Did you know the Joint Chiefs tried to change Biden's mind and he stood up to him? He's so brave. Using the dead soldiers as props on the front page of the Washington Post, Joe Biden waged through a cemetery to make the case, we've lost too many people. Donald Trump did that. They called it a photo op with dead people. Joe Biden does it. They say it's showing the imagery of why we must leave. Is it any wonder nobody trusts the media anymore? Is it any wonder? Listen, this is not about Biden. We're going to get into the policy here, but Donald J. Trump, president of the United States of America, Donald Trump wanted the troops out of Afghanistan. Donald Trump ordered the troops to get out of Afghanistan, and for multiple weeks, the media ran stories about how the Joint Chiefs were opposed, the Defense Department was opposed, the Defense Secretary was opposed, everyone was opposed. How could he do this? This was inappropriate. This was presidential overreach in the chain of command. Even though he's the commander-in-chief, how dare Donald Trump not take the advice of the Joint Chiefs? CNN literally had on talking head panels unanimously agreed that Donald Trump should not be withdrawing troops from Afghanistan because the Joint Chiefs and the like said, no, he shouldn't do it. And yet he chose to override them. The media at the time praised people like Marco Rubio and Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell for daring to stand up and say they did not think it was advisable for us to leave. And Donald Trump gave the order anyway. It was loudly condemned. In fact, the CNN spin at the time, I thought it was funny. Well, he's doing it on his way out the door, and he's not even consulting with the Biden administration. Who does he think he is? He's the freaking president of the United States. That's who. And then the Biden administration comes in, and Joe Biden says it's time to go home. It's time to go home. Headlines this morning, Joe Biden stood up to the Joint Chiefs. Joe Biden overruled the Joint Chiefs. Joe Biden stood up to the military chain of command saying we need to keep people here. That stupid Lindsey Graham is out there disagreeing with him. Who does Lindsey Graham think he is? Marco Rubio, who does he think he is? And on it goes. On and on it goes. The president made the right decision, Donald Trump. the president made the right decision, Joe Biden. The goal was to eradicate the Taliban's ability to make war on us. We accomplished that goal. We stayed for 20 years to try to help the Afghan government prop up, stand up, stay up, and we haven't been able to do that. Other countries have helped the Taliban against us to weaken and destabilize us, just as we did to Russia in the 1980s. We forgot all about that, it seems. Many American servicemen died. It's time to come home. It's been time for a while. I think Joe Biden is doing the right thing. I also think Donald Trump did the right thing. And I think it is fair to note that the reaction between the two is different. And it's different in the media, and it has everything to do with who the president is. The decision is the same, except Donald Trump wanted everyone home by May. Joe Biden is going to make September 11th the end date, which is kind of a crummy footnote there. Hey, let's get out on the anniversary of the day they attacked us. We're not supposed to point that out, though, because it's Joe Biden and he's precious in their sight. But it's the right call. Here's some of what Joe Biden said yesterday.
In my direction, my team is refining our national strategy to monitor and disrupt significant terrorist threats, not only in Afghanistan, but anywhere they may arise. And they're in Africa, Europe, the Middle East, and elsewhere. I spoke yesterday with President Bush to inform him of my decision. While he and I have had many disagreements over policy throughout the years, we're absolutely united in our respect and support for the valor, courage, and integrity of the women and men of the United States Armed Forces who served. I'm immensely grateful for the bravery and backbone that they have shown through nearly two decades of combat deployments. We as a nation are forever indebted to them and to their families. You all know that less than 1% of Americans serve in our armed forces. The remaining 99% of them, we owe them. We owe them. They've never backed down from a single mission that we've asked of them. I've witnessed their bravery firsthand during my visits to Afghanistan. They've never wavered in their resolve. They've paid a tremendous price on our behalf. And they have the thanks of a grateful nation. While we'll not stay involved in Afghanistan militarily, our diplomatic and humanitarian work will continue. We'll continue to support the government of Afghanistan. We will keep providing assistance to the Afghan National Defenses and Security Forces. And along with our partners, we have trained and equipped a standing force of over 300,000 Afghan personnel today and hundreds of thousands over the past two decades. And they'll continue to fight valiantly on behalf of the Afghans at great cost. They'll support peace talks as we will.
No, they won't. Let's be honest about this. In part of his speech, he had to note that we will have to contain the Taliban. And then he moved on rapidly to suggest that they could be peace partners. The Taliban is not going to be a peace partner. They've learned nothing. They think they've beat us. They're crowing in the international press about having beaten the Americans. We will have to contain them, and I don't know that Biden will be capable of containing them. This will cause problems. They will take back over Afghanistan. The Afghan government will fall. People will flee. How we handle the refugees is up in the air. But there's also this reality, and that is we don't need to stay. We've been there for 20 years. We have no purpose in staying at this point other than to continue to prop up a government that is incapable of taking care of itself. And we have other priorities, other things in the world we need to do. Here's Lindsey Graham.
Remember the famous statements being made that the warning lights are blinking red? As we ignored the buildup of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, this is what happened. This is what happened. Flight 93, where Americans on that flight were the first to fight back. What makes you think this won't happen again if we create the conditions for it to happen again? What's it worth to Americans to make sure this never happens again? Is it worth it to us as a nation to keep the fight over there so it doesn't come here? The risk that our soldiers take is to protect their homeland. President Biden went to Arlington today. I'm glad he did. I've got some friends there from Iraq and Afghanistan. This has been a very long war. The bottom line is they died in defense of their nation, not in some endless war. They died to make sure this never happens again. And I can assure you the likelihood of this and this happening again is going through the roof after President Biden's decision today, if it's not changed, because he's setting Afghanistan on a path to deteriorate rather quickly and for the enemy, radical Islam, to reconstitute. And it can all be avoided with a minimal commitment compared to the past. And I'm expecting the certifications owed to the Congress.
Senator Graham's not wrong. Let's give him that. Senator Lindsey Graham is not wrong that when we leave, the Taliban will take over and we will be constantly having to lob missiles. And I don't know that the Biden administration is up for lobbying regular missiles into Afghanistan. What if the Taliban create a safe haven for Chinese military? There are problems. There are concerns. But also, it's been 20 years. It's been 20 years, and it's not like we have a peaceful military presence. It's been a long time since World War II, and we've got bases in Europe, but we're not on a war footing there. We're there in case there's a war, but in Afghanistan, we are regularly there because of war. We haven't solved the problem. I don't like packing up and coming home. But the goal was always to punish and destabilize and drive from power the Taliban for having allowed Al-Qaeda to get a foothold in and orchestrate 9/11. We did that. We accomplished that a long time ago. And ever since, we've been trying to just keep out the Taliban from coming back to power. We have not been able to eradicate the Taliban, and the Afghan government seemingly has not been able to do it. The Afghan government hasn't been able to stand up on its own. At this point, I mission accomplished, come home. Our kids go to a school with their fine arts, the head of their finance arts department, or the band teacher. Every once in a while gets called up and has to go to Afghanistan. It is stressful for his whole family, his multiple kids. Stressful for the whole school community. They love the guy. And every couple of weeks, there's another report of more American servicemen getting killed in Afghanistan by the Taliban. Why? Why are they dying? They're dying so that we can keep the Taliban from power, really? Can we not then allow them to come back to power and regularly blow them up with cruise missiles instead? Why should your husband or your son or your nephew or your niece or your daughter or your wife or your friend's family have to continue to send soldiers to Afghanistan 20 years after we drove the Taliban from power, when that government itself is incapable of standing itself up, and maybe with the existential threat of us leaving, maybe, just maybe, they'll finally stand up and decide to do it themselves. And if they don't, well, they had 20 years to get ready for it, and they never did. At some point, the paternalism has to end. There are bigger priorities in the world right now, bigger dangers in the world than a third world regime that itself isn't capable of much and has to rely on others to do it. And a lot of those others are distracted elsewhere and stretching their legs out, the Chinese and the Russians, I think it's time for us to come home and start regrouping, because we got bigger threats coming than the Taliban. Joe Biden was right, but so was Donald Trump. And the people today praising Joe Biden didn't want to give Trump credit, and they should have. Welcome back. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Do you love your mother? Do you love your mom? Is your mom around for you to love? You know what you should do for your mom for Mother's Day, because you got a little while to think about this. You better get prepared for it. You should cook for your mom. Your mom grew up cooking for you. You should, now that you're grown up, cook for your mom. And you can do it with Omaha Steaks. You can go to omahasteaks.com today and put Georgia in the search bar, and you'll get an Omaha Steaks package, the Let's Go Grill package right now. You're going to get 12 burgers. You can have a family cookout. You're going to get butcher-cut fillets, so you can make a steak dinner for your mom, or pork chops or chicken breasts. Even get individual caramel apple tartlets you can put in the oven to heat up. My wife loves them. You can do all of this for your mom for Mother's Day. You've got time to prepare. Don't be a procrastinator. Don't put off tomorrow what you can do today. I normally put off today what I can do tomorrow, but you probably shouldn't. You should go to omahasteaks.com today. Up at the top of their website, you'll see a little magnifying glass if you're looking on your phone, or you'll see the search bar on a computer, desktop, web browser, and you put in Georgia, and you will see Eric Erickson Network when you do that, and you click that, you'll get the Let's Go Grill package, and you can get burgers, 12 of them for free, 12 burgers for free. So not only can you cook for your mom, you can have your annoying brothers and sisters come too to your house, and you can all have a shindig with mom. And who's mom going to love the most? You, because you did all the cooking and you didn't procrastinate. So go to omahasteaks.com today and put Georgia in the search bar. Love your mother. You'll love Omaha Steaks. My buddy Drew Holden has become, I'm actually jealous to some degree. I don't say this lightly. I am rather jealous of Drew Holden. Those of you who don't know Drew Holden, you can follow him on Twitter, Drew Holden 360. And I'm a little bit jealous of Drew Holden, because Drew Holden has this amazing ability to do these brilliant threads where he can compare and contrast media coverage and media hypocrisy. I don't have the bandwidth to do it, nor do I have the talent to do it. But Drew Holden does, and he has delivered a magnificent tour de force on Twitter, highlighting the coverage between Trump and Biden on withdrawing from Afghanistan. Here's CNN. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg issues a stark warning that any premature withdrawal from Afghanistan could be dangerous, a day after reports President Trump is eyeing a troop drawdown against the advice of the nation's top military officials. CNN again, as President Biden prepares to lay out his plan to withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan, a source familiar with his thinking tells Christian Amanpour that he thinks no amount of U.S. troops in the country can be a game changer anymore. CNN again, this is just reckless and it is really risky, says Brett Bruin of Trump's plan to withdraw troops from Afghanistan and Iraq. You're not sharing information with the incoming administration, so the likelihood that something could go wrong is very, very high. Here's CNN now. Former President Obama praised President Biden's bold leadership for his decision to withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan by September 11th, saying that it is time to recognize that we have accomplished all that we can militarily in America's longest war. CNN from September 11th, 2020. Diplomats worry Trump's desire to withdraw U.S. troops risks success of Afghan-Taliban talks. Now, President Biden has announced his decision to withdraw troops, regardless of what the Pentagon says. On and on it goes. The New York Times, ABC News, Time Magazine. The hypocrisy is complete. Thank you, Drew Holden, for finding all of that. Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. Delighted to have you with me. It's a Thursday. I thought it was Friday. I was in a better mood until I looked at the calendar. That's all right. Yesterday, it was the 156th anniversary of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. And Lawrence Gabright wrote out the Associated Press dispatch. Yes, the Associated Press has been around a long time. And he wrote out the dispatch to get the news across the country of what had happened. And we need to spend just a moment on this. Puts me behind all the other stuff I want to talk about, but this is too good not to. This is the actual dispatch of the Associated Press. If you will recall, if you did, well, you know, I grew up in Dubai. It was a somewhat unique experience growing up, but I had really good teachers and, you know, the basics of writing who, what, where, when, why, and how, but the who, what, where, when, why, and how, and you get as much as you can in the first paragraph so that people know what happened. Right out of the gate, you tell people, bam, here's what happened, and then you can fill in the details and expand upon it. They apparently didn't, maybe it is this dispatch from the Associated Press that, all right, let's begin. This is the first paragraph. I got to count the paragraphs so you get the point here. This is the first paragraph. Again, this is the Associated Press report. Abraham Lincoln has been assassinated. Paragraph one. President Lincoln and wife visited Ford's Theater this evening for the purpose of witnessing the performance of The American Cousin. It was announced in the papers that General Grant would also be present, but that gentleman took the late train of cars for New Jersey. Paragraph 2. The theater was densely crowded, and everybody seemed delighted with the scene before them. During the third act, and while there was a temporary pause for one of the actors to enter, a sharp report of a pistol was heard, which merely attracted attention but suggested nothing serious until a man rushed to the front of the president's box, waved the long dagger in his right hand, exclaimed, "Sic Semper Tyrannis," and immediately leapt from the box, which was in the second tier, to the stage beneath, and ran across to the opposite side, made his escape amid the bewilderment of the audience from the rear of the theater, and mounted a horse and fled. Paragraph 3. The groans of Mrs. Lincoln first disclosed the fact that the president had been shot, when all present rose to their feet, rushing towards the stage, many exclaiming, "Hang him, hang him." The excitement was of the wildest possible description. Paragraph 4. There was a rush towards the president's box when cries were heard, "Stand back and give him air. Has anyone stimulants?" On a hasty examination, it was found that the president had been shot through the head above and back of the temporal bone and that some of his brain was oozing out. He was removed to a private house opposite the theater, and the Surgeon General of the Army and other surgeons were sent for to attend to his condition. Paragraph 5. On an examination of the private box, blood was discovered on the back of the cushioned rocking chair on which the president had been sitting, also on the partition and on the floor. A common single-barrel pocket pistol was found on the carpet. Paragraph 6, a military guard was placed in front of the private residence in which the president had been conveyed. An immense crowd was in front of it, all deeply anxious to learn the condition of the president. President 7, it had been previously announced the wound was mortal, but all hoped otherwise. I don't mean to laugh at this. You got to get to the very bottom to understand the president of the United States has been assassinated. And still it goes on. At midnight, the cabinet with Mr. Sumner, Colfax, and Farnsworth, Judge Curtis, Governor Oglesby, General Meigs, Colonel Hayes, and a few personal friends with Surgeon General Barnes and his immediate assistants were around his bedside. Next paragraph. The president was in a state of syncope, totally insensible, and breathing slowly. The blood oozed from the wound at the back of his head. The surgeons exhausted every effort of medical skill, but all hope was gone. The next one, the parting of his family with the dying president is too sad for description. The next one, the president and Mrs. Lincoln did not start for the theater until 15 minutes after 8 o'clock. Speaker Colfax was at the White House at the time, and the president stated to him that he was going, although Mrs. Lincoln had not been well, because the papers had announced that he and General Grant were to be present. And as General Grant had gone north, he did not wish the audience to be disappointed. He went with apparent reluctance and urged Mr. Colfax to go with him, but the gentleman had made other arrangements. That was the Associated Press. April 14th, 1865, kind of burying the lead, I think. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 paragraphs in until you get to the president is going to die. 11 paragraphs into to him leaving, and then you get a few other miscellaneous details there at the end, including Vice President Johnson is secured and guarded by troops at the very last sentence. The vice president, you get like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 more paragraphs in. The vice president's been secured. Guards are protecting him. I'm sorry. I mean, listen, the detail, and it's as Charlie said, the lack of opining. There's no opinion in there from just hear the facts. But let's bury the lead that the president of the United States has been assassinated tonight. No. We're going to start with President Lincoln and his wife visited Ford's Theater this evening for the purpose of witnessing the performance of the American Cousins. It was announced in the papers that General Grant would also be present, but the gentleman took the late train of cars for New Jersey. Oh, man, how they did it back then. Goodness gracious. All right, we got to get into other stuff. I wanted to get to that. I didn't mean to, but goodness, it strikes me as funny. If you will recall, in 2020, the year 2020, everything Nancy Pelosi did was glorious. If Nancy Pelosi pooped, it was the smell of roses on a dewy morning. If Nancy Pelosi were to have belched salmon, it would have been the smell of the glorious angels of heaven come down to let loose on earth the aroma of wisteria. Everything Nancy Pelosi did was coming up roses. Everything. Nancy Pelosi stymieing the Republican effort to pass stimulus bill? Yep. Nancy Pelosi trying to urge efforts to raise taxes? Glorious. Nancy Pelosi, everything she did, the media said, was wonderful, grand, and glorious. And helping the media along was all the polling from the Democrats fed repeatedly and breathlessly to the media, showing that there's the blue wave coming. Nancy Pelosi knows what she's doing. There's a blue wave coming. It is massive. There's a massive blue wave coming. This is such a big blue wave. It's like the biggest, bluest wave we've ever seen. It would be tsunami, except tsunami might be a disrespectful word to use for Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. So it's just a big blue wave. The big blue. Nancy Pelosi, it's like the color of her hair. Wave is coming. And then it didn't. Donald Trump only lost by 40,000 votes in the Electoral College. The Republicans came within a handful of seats of picking back up the House. Had Republicans in Georgia not psychologically gotten depressed and bowed out, they would have kept the Senate. They picked up several state legislatures. They were expected to lose some. They held all their governor's mansions. They were expected to lose some. It was a great, other than the presidency, it was a massive, spectacular success for the GOP on election night. They went on 2 months later, convinced that the race in Atlanta was going to be stolen. They went on thereafter, and they, well, it kind of sabotaged themselves. Convinced that 427,205 Republicans who showed up in November did not show up in the runoff in Georgia. Overwhelmingly, when polled, those people said they thought it was just going to be stolen by the Democrats, so why turn out? So the Democrats naturally won. But the media the entire time has told the Democrats all the time that they are spectacularly grand and glorious. Nancy Pelosi can do no wrong. And now here comes this. House and Senate Democrats plan bill to add 4 justices to Supreme Court. Congressional Democrats plan to unveil legislation expanding the size of the Supreme Court on Thursday, according to 3 congressional sources familiar with the closely held measure. The bill would add 4 seats to the high court, bringing the total to 13 from the current 9. The bill is led by House Judiciary Committee Chair Jerry Nadler, Subcommittee Chair Hank Johnson, he's the one who thought Guam was going to tip over, and first-term Representative Mondaire Jones. In the Senate, the bill is being championed by Ed Markey of Massachusetts. The number of justices on the court, which is set by Congress, has fluctuated through the course of the nation's history, reaching as many as 10 seats before settling on 9 in 1869. In 2016, Senator Ted Cruz suggested that if Hillary Clinton were elected, the Republican Senate should keep Justice Antonin Scalia's seat empty, effectively bringing the number down to 8. Republicans currently hold 6 seats, while Democrats hold just 3. Republicans were able to solidify control of the court under former President Donald Trump after first refusing to advance Merrick Garland's confirmation nomination under former President Barack Obama and then confirming Justice Neil Gorsuch after Trump's election. Then after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died last September, Republicans threw out the procedures they had previously embraced and confirmed Justice Amy Coney Barrett in a matter of weeks. After Trump's nomination of Coney Barrett, then Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer faced pressure to stop her confirmation by any means necessary. When those myriad options fell short and Coney Barrett was pushed through, the conversation turned to expanding the court. Not only do these extremist judges threaten more than a century of progressive achievements, read a letter by Schumer to Schumer by 20 New York elected officials, they threaten to foreclose the possibility of any future progress under a Democratic administration. But after Democrats lost races they hoped to win in Maine, North Carolina, and Iowa, some Democratic strategists argued that the talk of court packing and ending the filibuster had inspired more Republican voters to vote. In April, Joe Biden created a commission to study possible reforms. This past October, Biden promised to create such a commission. So now they're bypassing Biden's commission. They want to get on with it. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was opposed to it. Stephen Breyer is opposed to it. Harry Reid is opposed to it, but the Democrats, torpedoes be damned, this is all about power for them now. Power, shattering the norms, shattering the norms. The Democrats do this in large part because the media is so on their side, and the media, we are now more and more seeing, can't actually stop the Republican message from getting out. Tucker Carlson has become a fascinating fixation for the American press. CNN is obsessed with Tucker Carlson. Brian Stetler, on a regular basis, talks up Tucker Carlson. The Associated Press now does as well. The Washington Post, the LA Times, taking marching orders from CNN. This is clearly organized on the left somewhere to try to vilify and demonize Fox News and Tucker Carlson, to go after more of their advertisers and try to tie every Republican to him with things often mischaracterized of what Tucker says. They don't actually report accurately his entire strain of thought. They report slight snippets of it and claim it represents the whole when it doesn't. The reason is they're in such a bubble and they don't like that Fox is outside the bubble, but more importantly, they don't like this fact. Tucker Carlson has a large audience, and the media, working with the Democrats for a long time, has been trying to set a specific narrative that advances Democratic agenda items, and they really, really hate it that this Tucker guy and his network, and now some of the up-and-coming networks like Newsmax, are able to tell a story that deviates from media orthodoxy. I mean, let's talk about David Shore. David Shore was a Democratic pollster, a progressive, diehard progressive, who pointed out that the defund the police message last year was a loser for the Democrats and was going to cost them votes. And he was punished ruthlessly by progressives, driven out of his employer. He now has another job, and he's not allowed to say who he's with because the wokes came for him for speaking truth to their power. They don't like it when people, even on their side, speak truth to their power. Tucker Carlson last year was pointing out that Nancy Pelosi was out to lunch on these issues. It would blow up in the Democrats' face, and he was right. They do not like having alternatives to their state-held media narrative, and it is now the state media. They collaborate with the Biden administration, witnessed the leg humping of Joe Biden by the press corps over his withdrawal from Afghanistan when 6 months ago, when Donald Trump said he was going to do it, they roundly attacked him, unanimously attacked him. The Democrats only hear that what they do is grand and glorious, their poop doesn't stink, and they're powered by unicorn farts. So they've introduced a plan to add 4 justices to the Supreme Court with the urging of progressives in the media. But it's not just that. They're also advancing a plan on reparations. In a year of reckoning, slavery reparations bill moves forward in the House. The House Judiciary Committee voted along party lines to send a bill to the House floor for the first time to create a commission to study the legacy of American slavery, racist laws and how they affected formerly enslaved people and their descendants. The bill instructs the 13-person committee to consider a national apology and recommend any appropriate remedies to Congress. They waited until after 11 p.m. Eastern to cast the vote. 25 Democrats supported the bill. All 17 Republicans opposed it. It is designed to push reparations. And they waited until no one was awake to pass it. Now they want to fire the Congressional Budget Office chief, because the Congressional Budget Office chief is pushing out numbers that show lots of the Democratic agenda, including raising the minimum wage, would actually hurt the national debt. All of these are norm-shattering, and Donald Trump, they said, was a bull in the China shop of normality, smashing them all. And here comes Joe Biden and the Democrats smashing even more, but the media's on their side, so they want to attack anyone like Tucker Carlson and the like for daring to point out what's going on and deviating from media orthodoxy. And then they tell the Democrats, you're grand and you're glorious and keep on. And then the voters react. The polling, by the way, on packing the Supreme Court is disastrous for the Democrats. So we should probably thank them for going on and rushing it. Let's see who all votes for it. Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. Glad to have you with me. The phone number, if you want to be a part of the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. It is allergy season. It's dust season. It's frying season. It's everything season. Mold and mildew, bacteria, they got you down in your house. You should go check out Eden Pure's air filters. They've got air purifiers, rather. They've got a great line of them, but one of the best that they have, because it's so small and portable, you can take it with you, is the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. You can hold it in your hand. You can use a USB charger with it. You can plug it into the wall. My son, I keep telling you the story, and I continue to remark on this, that he and I have terrible allergies. We got to get our allergy shots. And he wakes up every morning and his nose is just covered in goop. And we've been running the Eden Pure Thunderstorm in his room at night, largely because he stole it. I was going to use it. But he doesn't wake up with snot in his nose every morning now. It's the Eden Pure that we credit this with, because it's a before and after difference. You can see it for yourself. If you go to EdenPureDeals.com, you get $10 off their lowest sale price. If you use the code word Eric, E-R-I-C-K, at checkout, Eden, like the Garden of Eden, EdenPureDeals.com, and get the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. It is portable. It's small, but it packs a wallop. It does a great job. Odor, it gets rid of odors. It can take the mold and mildew out of the air. It deals with allergies. You name it. It's a great air purifier. They've got bigger ones as well, but the Eden Pure Thunderstorm, it works great in a room. I can tell you with my kid, I had to go buy my own because he won't give me the one back that's in his room. So go to EdenPureDeals.com today. Use Eric, E-R-I-C-K, at checkout. Swiss billionaire Hans-Jörg Wyss is a billionaire from selling a company to Johnson & Johnson. He's also a progressive activist who has poured money into Democratic operations using something called the Hub Project. The Wyss Foundation wants to shape media coverage to help Democratic causes. It has 60 employees, and it's going to buy the Tribune. Now, what's so interesting here is the media wants to praise his investment in the media, but Mr. Wyss is a socialist. Even though he made billions of dollars selling a company to Johnson & Johnson, he now wants to impose that socialism on the United States through ownership of a media conglomerate to essentially write stories that frame a narrative, not tell you facts and truth, but frame a narrative that helps the left. That's what he wants to do. That's exactly what he wants to do, and that's what he's going to do. And that's what the media is going to let him get away with and help him with, I'm sure. The media that is so afraid of Russians' interference in our elections is perfectly happy to have a Swiss billionaire interfere in the elections because they're ideological soulmates. They're perfectly happy to have a foreigner interfere in our elections because he's giving the press money. This comes at a time, by the way, the Associated Press says a study finds people want more than watchdogs for journalists. They actually want the who, what, where, when, why. They don't want the opinionation, the pontification, and the punditry from the press. The Associated Press did a study with the Media Insight Project. It turns out a growing number of Americans, not just conservatives, are tired of the way the media covers the news. This guy's going to make it worse and sow even more distrust as he tries to shape the news. Where are the Republican billionaires doing this sort of stuff? They kind of need to be involved as well. The leftists, they always want their return on investment to be ideological.